KCN, Talk Line Communications Network Radio, America's number one Jewish program.
What are we gonna do with our children? What are we gonna do to show we care? How are we gonna be there for our children when they feel that life has just not been that fair?
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Jay Booksbaum. You know me probably from wine and spirits, but I want to tell you something. Even though I'm in that area of expertise, you're about to hear from Rachama Bistritsky Klapman, who runs MASS, Mothers and Fathers, the Line Saving Kids. They're in their 20th anniversary. They've got over 45,000 families that they've helped over the years. It's an amazing program. It's called Family Matters. And if you've got any issues with bullying or alcohol or substance abuse or any other kind of abuse, they're your place to go. I'm really excited to introduce you all to Rachama Bistritsky Klapman here on Deb Brenner's Talk Line Communications Network every Thursday night at 9 o'clock. Listen to Rachama and Family Matters.
Good evening and welcome back to MASS's radio show, Family Matters, every Thursday night. Tonight, we are so pleased to have with us, we are honored to have with us, Dr. Ronnie Glassman, licensed clinical social worker, director of field placement, Wurzweiler School of Social Work, Yeshiva University. Thank you for making time to be with us tonight.
Thank you so much. I'm honored to be your guest. This is a wonderful opportunity for us to speak with one another. Thank you.
Dr. Glassman, we have been working. MASC has been having interns over the last 12 years, I think it is. We've been working together, and it's been a wonderful, wonderful experience every year that you send us your stars to work in the schools, to work with the students, elementary and high school. So on behalf of my staff, I want to publicly say thank you for always sending us such wonderful young women and young men.
Thank you. We're very pleased to be able to provide that kind of support to MASC, and to be able to send our interns to the yeshivas. What we've done is provide the supervision for our students through the school. And that's our way also of doing everything we can to support your program at MASC, which has hosted students over the years. And it's been a terrific learning experience for our students, and our supervisors have valued the opportunity.
Thank you. Yes, indeed. It has been a terrific relationship, and I hope it continues. I wanted to, just for my listeners, to understand what does it mean when they're when your interns are placed in a yeshiva, what exactly do you expect from the interns? And as a parent, what would I imagine be happening between a student, a child, and an intern in the yeshivas?
In the yeshivas. So we want our students to have an opportunity to develop some counseling skills, to develop ability to work with groups, and we find that being able to work with youth and children in groups is wonderful experience for the kids, and it's a wonderful opportunity for our interns as well. They are doing relationship development with the children in the schools and looking to see if there's any way they can enhance the socialization process of the children in school, to see if some of their interventions can help improve their academic performance or contain some behaviors that might be a little dysfunctional in the classroom, or just not helpful to that child as a learner, and also as someone who needs to socialize with other children to develop positive supportive relationships. And our theory tells us that the children throughout, if they have positive attachments to the school, which includes relationships with the other children, but also with the teachers and the administrators at the school, that they will endeavor to participate in the school and maximize their learning. And that's part of the goal of our interns. We also want our interns to learn and to be able to be supervised. And all interns in all schools of social work are supervised by a qualified social worker. And so in this situation, we have social workers. That is our gift to the MASC program, that provides supervision by a licensed social worker when there isn't someone on site to provide the supervision. So none of our interns function alone. Everything they do is enhanced and supported and reflected on by their supervisor and the student. And confidentiality is maintained. This is not a setting where the student and the supervisor are knowledgeable about who that particular child is. It's much more about the interventions and the use of self. I hope this answers your question in a helpful manner.
Yes, thank you. It has, indeed. I want everybody to know that Wurzweiler places students in many different agencies, not only MASC.
Everywhere.
Are you able to mention some of the religious agencies that you have students in?
Sure, I can do that. It's not a secret, and the schools of social work in New York City have relationships. We all have relationships with well over 200, 300 agencies. We work with Jewish Board of Family and Children's Services and OHEL and Jewish Community Relations Council, which is more of a community organizing as opposed to a clinical kind of setting. We work with Jewish Child Care. We have many, many programs that we place students in, and some smaller ones that are in the community. We have them in nursing homes, in Borough Park. We have students. They're in Rockaway, in the Five Towns. They're in Far Rockaway. So our students are everywhere. And they're placed in, you know, accredited, state-accredited programs.
Dr. Glassman, I just want our listeners to know that in addition to your supervision, all the interns also get supervised once a month by MASC's supervisor, which has a CIFI certificate. Can you explain to our listeners in general what sort of supervisors supervise your students?
Sure. They range. The minimum requirement is that they are 3 years beyond their master's in social work, that they've practiced, that they are licensed master social workers, and some are also licensed clinical social workers. Those are the people with that license. They are trained through a course that all the schools of social work in the master's programs in New York offer, and we've developed that curriculum jointly. It's called the Seminar in Field Instruction, and some people call it the SIFI. It's a 12-week course. They receive also continuing education credits for that, and that course facilitates their ability to become educational supervisors. These are particular skills that are involved in being able to supervise someone's clinical practice. That's different from being a practitioner or being a classroom teacher. And so there is an extensive training program that's built on a vast body of literature that those of us in field education are very familiar with, and some of us have written about it.
Thank you. You brought up confidentiality, and confidentiality is the most important thing that we need to teach the students and teach the staff always in social work, school, at a job. It is the most important first thing we discuss when students start at MASC. When staff is hired, confidentiality is the number one most important thing that is taken most seriously. How do you at Wurzweiler deal with the issue of confidentiality? How do you impart upon the students the importance of that? Because parents are scared about children speaking to therapists that they may not know, they may never even meet them in the school. So just for my listeners to feel comfortable, if you can talk about confidentiality with the students, please.
So just stepping back a minute, starting from the vantage point that all professions have codes of ethics. And social work is a profession that's heavily steeped in ethical codes. And major to that is confidentiality. So we begin at entry into the two-year full-time MSW program with discussions about confidentiality. And this topic is in all the classrooms. It's in the practice classes, and it's dealt with the field instructors as well. This means that students have to be mindful that any written documents, anything they write for class, disguises the identity of the client, that they don't talk about clients except in a supervisory way, and that anything that goes on with clients, starting with identity, first and foremost, but also any other issues are not, they're not to be talked about except in a very clear classroom environment where identities are disguised as well. Family, any issues. And this carries through the program and is a very important part of the ethical code of the National Association of Social Workers, which students must be familiar with, and that's operating ethically is one of the competencies that is mandated for our profession and against which students are also evaluated. So there are many checks and balances as well in professional conduct that is that includes confidentiality is very major.
Thank you. And how many hours generally first year, second year students do they need to work in a school for their internship?
So the Master's in Social Work program as a two-year master's at our school requires a minimum of 600 hours for the first year and 600 hours for the second year. So there's a lot of clinical training that goes on. That's the minimum. And that basically works out to be 3 days a week at 21 hours a week for 30 weeks. The fall and spring semester from September to May, generally. There are some second year students that have come with bachelor's in social work and they'll do more hours. They're required to put in 800 hours, not 600. So we're very intensive about our commitment to teaching practice.
Now I'd like to go to the definitions of MSW, LCSW. What is a psychologist and how is it different than a social worker? Many times parents call Mask Helpline and they'll say, I need a psychologist, I need a psychiatrist, I need a doctor. And I think that after speaking with parents and educating them, they then understand that they may not need a psychologist. They may also be able to deal with their issues with a social worker. So can we talk about the different definitions and licensing, please?
Yes, absolutely. So the Master in Social Work degree is a 60-credit, full-time, two-year program. And upon completion of the degree, one can then sit for the state licensing exam. And this is across the entire country. The LMSW is the generic social work license. And you can practice in agencies for a lifetime with that license, the LMSW. The clinical license, the LCSW, is generally for those people who have a certain number of years of experience post-LMSW under supervision in a clinical caseload, who then will sit for that exam, and that allows them to also be in private practice, in addition to working in agencies and carrying that license. The psychologist is generally a PhD in psychology, and the title psychologist is a protected title. You cannot call yourself a psychologist unless you have a doctorate in psychology. And when they complete their degree, they also sit for a license and then are licensed as psychologists. There is another group, the licensed mental health workers, LMH, that have a degree in counseling, usually within psychology departments. It's a master's in mental health counseling. I believe it's a year degree. It is not a two-year degree like the MSW. They do have an internship, and they do sit for a license. They do not call themselves psychologists. There are school psychologists also that have very particular kinds of licenses. In the domain of social work, over the years, those of us that are involved at the national level are aware that most of the psychotherapy done in America is done by social workers. I would say at one point we had said 75% to 85% of all psychotherapy in America was provided by social workers. And we work with a variety of other providers depending upon what the issues are, so we always have, in certain cases, psychiatric backup, and they are MDs with a very different kind of license and background. We will very often rely upon psychologists, especially the learning experts when it comes to schools, to try to understand more clearly from them what the learning issues are for kids that are having some difficulties in school and might work out together a treatment plan, an approach, a way to kind of improve the child's situation. And it will, from time to time, include a psychiatrist who may prescribe some form of medication. One of the things that we've discovered is how the talking cure, which we could call psychotherapy or counseling or supportive counseling or socialization counseling, can work really well on its own. It works really well with medication when people need that, and that medication by itself is not as effective. That you do need, for example, a person who has depression or bipolar, more complex issues, may be medicated, may have some sort of a treatment plan with a psychiatrist, but generally speaking, the psychiatrists want that individual also to see a therapist on at least a weekly basis. So when you combine the talking cure with medication in those instances, you usually get optimal effects.
Well, thank you. That was really so many people listening, because when you call for a referral, when somebody may call the hotline and ask for a referral, they really don't even know what to ask for. So thank you for that clarity. Then there's some people that say they go to their MD, their regular internist, to get medication for whether it's depression or other mental health issues. And that's not something MASC recommends. What are the feelings from Wurzweiler? Isn't it so that a psychiatrist dealing with mental health issues should be really the one to go to when need be?
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. Look, doctors prescribe generally, they tend to prescribe the anti-anxiety medications, sometimes the antidepressants. You really have to see a psychiatrist. They're just much better trained to do this and to figure it out. In my own private practice, I do have a psychiatrist that I work with, and this person is very adept at sort of monitoring and figuring out, is it too much medication? How do I make it work for that person? Medication is nuanced, and so my recommendation is always see a psychiatrist. And we need to destigmatize all of this. This is medicine. That's it. We don't. There's so much that we're learning about the brain that we didn't know when I was in school in my younger years, and it's very important that we factor in all of the medical sources of help, and that we integrate them, that we stay away from stigmatizing a mental health issue. You don't stigmatize a broken arm, but why stigmatize depression or anxiety? Take the person to either the orthopedist if that's what they need, or to the psychiatrist if you think that's what they need, and then take it from there.
That's a very important message that I want to leave our listeners with tonight, is working towards stigma-free. MASC, Thrive New York City, all the organizations out there are working towards stigma-free, making it easier and comfortable for families to reach out to get the assistance that they may need for their loved ones. Mm-hmm. Having any mental health illness, having an addiction, it doesn't mean that you're a bad person. It doesn't mean that that's all you're about. The person is the same person they are before being diagnosed, and we need to make families feel comfortable to reach out and get the help that they may need. Can you just describe some of the kinds of things that would be spoken to the interns, like bullying, mm-hmm. From the elementary age, how it's different than in the high school age to your interns?
So one of the things that I like to do in giving interns to MASC is kind of pick students that are somewhat useful and relatable in that way, that where youth is their advantage, if you will, so that children can open up in the informality of a relationship with a student intern. You know, they might play some games, they might be sitting around in a group kind of chatting about classroom stuff, and the students are trained to pick up certain phrases that the children might speak. The unsaid words, well, what did you mean by that? You said that, you know, you ran away from that child. What was that? Yeah, or, so tell us, you know, or tell me, about that. And bullying is something, feeling that you don't fit. That's always a big one. And you never know what's going on in the kid's head. You have to be able to sort of use the skill set that the social work students are learning to get that information. And part of it is to let them know kind of unconditionally that I make no judgments about how you think or feel or about what you tell me. And that's kind of a stance and attitude that the social work intern brings to the interaction with the child. And they find out, you know, what kind of difficulty the child might be having in social relationships. You know, I wanted to do such and such and I wasn't able to do it.
That's definitely something they bring up here. Dr. Glassman, licensed clinical social worker, director field placement in Wurzweiler School of Social Work, Yeshiva University. Oh, wow, time flies. I want to really thank you very, very much on behalf of MASC for joining us here tonight. Anybody that wants to reach Dr. Glassman or MASC, feel free to call 718-758-0400. And we have to end now. I'd like to wish our listeners good evening and a good Shabbos. Thank you, Dr. Glassman.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night.
Gonna do with our children? What are we gonna do to show we care? How are we gonna be there for our children when they feel that life has just not been that fair? What are we gonna do with our children? What are we gonna do to show we care?
WCN, Talk Line Communications Network Radio, America's number one Jewish program.